and welcome to the Moonshine Jesus Show, brought to you as always by ProgressiveChristianity.org, a wonderful place to get all your progressive Christian resources. Hope you will check them out online and follow them on social media. We also hope you'll subscribe to us on social media and wherever you get your podcasts. I am joined, as always, by Mark Sandlin. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing great, man. I'm looking forward to our show, as always. I hope you're doing okay.
I'm doing great. I can't wait to talk about Poor Things, which is what we're talking about today. It's been out for a little while, but if you haven't seen it, we have to tell you that we will have some spoilers on the show. So if you want to go in fresh without spoilers, make sure that you kind of pause this, go watch it, come back, and listen to this episode. So before we get into this, we always start with a very important tradition, and that is pouring ourselves a drink to enjoy this.
Mark? I do. I don't know if you, so this is sort of the journey of one woman's movement towards what? Enlightenment, sort of a maybe intellectual sophistication. Okay. Yeah. And so I thought about growing up, what drink I thought of when I thought about kind of being sophisticated. And honestly, it's just a simple drink, a nice glass of red wine. So I've poured myself a rather large glass of a Cabernet Sauvignon. And so I figured, you know, if we're going to talk about being sophisticated, I might as well look like I'm drinking sophisticated.
Yes. All right. Yes. Very sophisticated of you, Mark.
How about you, sir?
Very classy.
I'm trying.
I'm not so sophisticated. So I was thinking about the mad scientist element of this show, because that is an important element here. And so I found myself a glass that looked kind of like a beaker. And I started looking for a color that reminded me of something I might see in a lab. So I've got here kind of a beaker glass and a green liquid. So this is blue curacao, vodka, and orange juice. That's how I got the green color here.
So I like it. Cheers. It looks like it'll probably be delicious. Cheers, sir.
It will. All right. Okay. Mm. Let's take a break and come back. Get into it.
Hello, and welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show. You're joining us for our Geek Out segment. We're going to spend a little time sort of just geeking out about the movie. We'll dive in. We won't spend too much time. We'll dive into it briefly, but then we're going to quickly shift gears and talk about the Theo and political implications of the show. But for those who may not know much about Poor Things is a painfully overcrafted artistic reimagination of that's my own personal notes. I scratched that back up. Let me give you the actual description.
I'm like, wait, this does not sound like the official synopsis.
It's not. That's my personal notes. I apologize.
Overcrafted, okay.
So, Poor Things is about a young woman who is brought back to life by an unorthodox Dr. Frankenstein-ish scientist by replacing her dead brain with the brain of her unborn child. And she runs off with a lawyer on a whirlwind adventure across the continents and has a lot of sexual experiences. And ultimately she matures, discovers herself, and advocates for basically equality and liberation. So Caleb.
Yes.
Was this movie a great movie, a bad movie, or just a movie that was trying too hard, or something in between all of those?
So the thing that surprised me about this movie is that this struck me as a pretty typical kind of independent film making commentary on issues. And I was surprised that it gained as large of an audience as it did, and mm-hmm. that it was received in the way that it was. So I liked the movie. I thought that it was entertaining to watch, and I thought that it was trying to make some important commentary. But was it trying too hard? Yeah, it was trying pretty hard to make the points that it wanted to make. Did it deserve Oscars? I don't know about that. So think it was a little overcrafted, Mark? Is that what you're saying? Is that what I heard in your synopsis?
I think so. Yeah. It was definitely overcrafted. As a matter of fact, I'm going to just let this slide into my next question, and then we're going to move on to the question of Oscars as well, kind of out of order of what I was expecting. But so
I like to do that.
Yeah, it's great. Did you feel like this ended up being a movie about liberation, self-discovery, or maybe misogyny, or maybe anti-capitalism, or possibly rebirth, redemption? Nature versus society. Well, I mean, personal autonomy, it could be. Rebellion is possibly. Puritan perspectives about sex would be a possibly. Or was it maybe about social constraints? Which one did you think this was actually about?
Wait, are you saying that this couldn't quite land on a topic, Mark?
I'm just saying, which one stood out or did one?
I think you're right that we had trouble landing on a topic and making commentary. Although I would say that if I had to pick what we talked most about, I think was about women's control of their own sexuality. Absolutely. And the empowerment that can bring, especially in a society where sexuality is being repressed. So I think that's where we spent the most time. That's where we landed the most. What do you think? Do you think we had a topic that we ever landed on?
Yeah, the whole point that I was trying to make is, yes, I completely agree. Sort of a sexual liberation, sexual mm-hmm. discovery of women in the midst of a masculine dominated sex-oriented society is definitely like the main theme. I actually am, and I think that's a great theme that really we need to keep seeing movies about. And we're seeing an increasing number about movies about that, which I think is fantastic. I want to see more of that. I think this movie, I'm kind of back where you were talking about earlier. Did it deserve all these Oscars? And we're going to go back and talk about that in just a second.
Yeah.
You know, a really great movie with such an important topic. Those are just the ones that in about a few minutes, I kind of...
That you came up with?
Yes. There's that topic. Mm-hmm. I feel like it watered down this really important topic by trying to talk about all these different pieces. I got another question coming up that I think is part of the answer to why they did that. But I just think it's sort of problematic that they did that. I mean... Didn't the other one get lost a little bit? Like the real point, one of the main points?
I think it did. And the other thing that I think may have drowned out the message a little bit is this style and story. I'm not sure if the style, if the story that we've got here helped or not, or detracted from it. I think we lost a lot of that message in focusing on some of these other issues from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like there's part of me, the artistic kind of film buff nerd part of me. There was part of the very elaborate styling that they did, going from the black and white to the overly colored to fish-eyed stuff when Emma's experiencing things for the first time, to overly colored when she starts feeling like life is a playground. Beautiful, and then going back to sort of regular normal color when she is more fully enlightened. And I kind of like some of that playfulness. I like that type of thing. But it's still all just, it was, there was too much of everything. Too much of everything. And that is to be expected. And I'm not even going to butcher his name, but the director is known for kind of doing overly stylized type of things. But I just, once again, I felt like they were trying to talk about was so important that we should have reeled back 10, 20% on all the things so that it could have a little more space to breathe into that important topic, you know?
You're a little much, poor things. Dial it back. We need it back a little bit. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it got nominated for, I think, 10 Oscars.
A lot of Oscars. Yeah.
Won four. It won Oscars for best leading role as an actress, best production design, best costume design, best makeup and hairstyling. Were there any... Do you think those were deserving? And are there any places where you went, I hate that they didn't win something there if they were going to win for those other ones?
I don't know that, as I said, when I was watching it, that I thought, I think this is an Oscar-worthy film. I did think Emma Stone, I like Emma Stone. I think she did a good job playing... This interesting character, I don't know. I'm not sure that there were lots of talented actresses in that category. I'm not sure, and I think that we did get some interesting costuming. We got some interesting production, but Mark, I don't think I would have been sad if this or felt cheated or anything if this film hadn't won any Oscars. I was more surprised that it did. Yeah. So I didn't relate. How about you?
When I was watching it, I was struggling watching it. Frankly, I had a hard time like really sticking with it. It was weird and interesting, but it was a little much for me. But long, over 2 hours. I remember watching it and going, oh, this is going to get nominated like mad, because all of those industry insiders, all of those deep film nerds, and I say that with great respect, we love our nerds, are going to love the high, over-the-top artistic license taken here, and are going to want to reward that, and are going to, in a sort of psychological perspective, feel good about themselves for rewarding that and being able to recognize how beautifully artistic and how it pulled from all of these different film styles and pulled them back together to cover the story. I know that there were people watching who understood that really, really deeply. But 90% of the folks who watched this did not. And so all of that's a waste. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, however you want to look at it, most of the folks that are voting for the Oscars are aware of all of that. And so I knew that in my heart, I was like, this is, going to be a heavily awarded show. But I'm with you. I kind of felt like there's other ones that I would have rather put into it. I did think Emma Stone was incredible in this role. I'm not sure there were many actresses that could have pulled it off in a believable way. I'll admit, me personally, at first, early on in the character, I wasn't fully buying into her buying into it, but very quickly that changed, and she just consumed the role, and it was amazing. I did sort of think Mark Ruffalo might have almost deserved he was exceptional in this role.
And he was not super Mark Ruffalo-y. Because he often kind of just plays himself in anything that he is in. And I think Hulk is a case in point. And he kind of let his Mark Ruffalo-ness go a little bit in this role.
I agree.
I thought he was good.
Yeah, I was really impressed with him. I'm not even saying that I wasn't impressed with William Dafoe, because also a difficult character to to pull off as sympathetic in some way. And he did. He was stern and direct, but yet had a heart that was sympathetic. Mm-hmm. And under all that makeup, even more difficult to do. So, so let's move on. We're starting to talk about some of the things that we like. What did it was easy to bash. So easy to bash this movie. And I think it's the popular thing to make yourself like a filmy insider to talk about how much you love it and how great it is. Let's be honest. Both of us, it sounds like this wasn't our favorite film by a long stretch of what we watched. But there were some good things. There were some redeeming qualities. What did you like about the movie?
I did like seeing some real character growth of Bella, Emma Stone's character. I thought that that was kind of fun to see her really develop in the role over the course of the 2.5 hours or whatever, to see her go from basically an infant to a more sophisticated person, maybe even drinking a cab salve as she's being sophisticated. Yeah, so I thought that that was really interesting. Yes, I thought that that was good. I thought it was interesting how they explored sexual liberation, and I thought that that was particularly poignant at this point in our history. I thought it was interesting that they did that. I did think that that playing with black and white and color was visually interesting, and it certainly drove home the point that they were trying to make. So I enjoyed those elements of it. I also liked that we got a story that wasn't just a regurgitating of other stories that we've heard 5 million times. We got a unique story here, and maybe we got too much of it. And like you said, maybe we need to dial back some, but it was a unique story, and I did appreciate hearing a different story. How about you? What did you like about it, Mark?
Yeah, I liked what we talked about being the main storyline, sort of the enlightenment that's leading to self-liberation, which is pushing back against a male-dominated society that's particularly fixated on sex and sexuality. I really think it's an important message, and I like if you can pull out that theme and watch that story arch as every male who enters into her life tries to control her in some way, and how she finds ways to push back and to be more autonomous in outside of each one of those. I loved the way that they did that. I just felt it got watered down with all the other kinds of things they were trying to make commentary on. All of them really important things, but you don't have to do it all in one movie. Other people are going to make movies this year.
Right.
I'm just saying. let's let some other people do stuff, you know? But I also liked how they designed this movie. You could tell that almost all of it was practically shot. There wasn't a lot of CGI going on, even though we were in some pretty fantastical spaces. A lot of it was done on set, and they built them real, which I thought really helped, because that kind of artistic side that they took by really overly bright and vivid colors, which can feel fake, it helped ground them that it was all practically done. And I really thought that was an interesting choice and a good choice for helping us kind of buy into the movie. But overall, I really did feel like it was, as I said, when I was jokingly introducing Poorer Things, a painfully overly crafted artistic reimagining of Frankenstein. It had much potential, and I can't get on board with all of the hype. And it sounds like maybe you feel the same, right?
I'm with you. Yeah. Too much hype.
Okay. Well, we could geek a little bit more about this, but we won't do so. We do love getting into the theological and political. And there is certainly, as you've heard in my list, lots of theological and political to choose from. So we'll take a quick break and we'll come back on the other side of this drop.
Welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show, where today we're talking about poor things and we're moving into our Theopolitico segment. And as Mark said, there's a lot going on here, but the main thing that we're talking about, I think, is sexual liberation. And as I was thinking about this, Mark, I got to wondering, is there a Christian sexual ethic? If so, what is it? And if not, why do we hear so much about it?
Yes, there is one, but it's not the one we hear all about. It happens to be, surprisingly, the exact same Christian theme, theological perspective that we bring to everything. It's simply love, loving each other, kindness, caring about each other. And so, yeah, I mean, we get tied up in sort of the Puritan perspectives on what sex is and should be and all of those kinds of things and stop thinking. We allow it to be about the act and not about the person, not about the relationships, not about how people interact and what it means to who they are together or who, however you're having sex and the number of people involved or whatever. Rather than just saying what's important here is that everyone is included, that everyone is respected, and that everyone is a willing participant and is gaining something positive for themselves from this. We get caught up in the act and we kind of ignore the relationships and the folks that are involved. And I think it's one of the worst things that we've done. It's why I think it's such an important theme. I'm glad that there's movies talking about it, that maybe we can enlighten ourselves quite a bit about sex and sexuality and about what is really, truly a gift and should be celebrated. And we spend a lot of time, Christians in particular, spend a lot of times not celebrating it, but looking down on it and seeing it as evil and bad and that it corrupts people rather than it opens them up and enlarges their lives. I think we got a lot more work to do to get there. And I love seeing shows like this helping us do it.
I think that's a great point, Mark, that we get so concerned, at least mainstream Christianity, I think, about the acts, about what's actually happening in the bedroom and setting rules about that, right, or people's own standards on what's acceptable and what's not. And yeah, I think in part it's because we've got a lot of bad examples of relationships in the Bible. And, absolutely, you know, I think that people, especially this is one of the big issues with inerrancy, right? That there are lots of poor examples of, you know, of relationships and certainly ones that don't model consent and love. Yeah. And,
yeah. We're talking about it. 66 books that were all written right during time period when women were considered property at best.
Yes.
And, yeah, you can't figure that they had healthy ideas.
You don't think so? That's not a good example of how we should set modern relationships.
Absolutely not. That's clearly one of the things that this movie was talking directly about. I can't remember the character, but I think both her ex-husband and the lawyer speak of her as property and something to be owned and something to be possessed. And a lot of that language does come from biblical perspectives. So we need to own that.
That's right. We need to own it and also confront it that, like, if our theology is built around love and we have that ethic not only in our, you know, our agape love relationships, neighborly love relationships, but our eros love relationships as well, sexual relationships as well. So building on what you were just talking about, Mark, one of the points that really stood out for me is we get this character who is helping to take care of Bella as she is developing and gets engaged to her, right? And he says, I don't wish to take advantage of you. You know, he wants her consent to get engaged, but she's like mentally the age of a child. She's incapable of giving consent. So we see her sexual identity, her sexuality, her very self controlled by men at every turn. Tell me, Mark, Do we see any modern examples of women's sexuality being controlled by men? No.
We're too enlightened for that now. No, we're all
over here drinking cab stuff.
Right.
Enjoying.
I mean, clearly there's all kinds of things you could point to, but I think the one that we have to be talking about right now is bodily autonomy. And a woman's right to make choices for herself about reproduction. What we have is a nation full of white Christian men who still are buying into the concept that somehow that they have some rights, some ownership, some ruling over women's bodies. And we've got no one to blame but ourselves as Christians that we've allowed that false perspective to live for so long. It's because men have gained from it so much and are able to control women with it. And if we ever want to truly believe that we live into the biblical hermeneutic of love, this is one that has to be fixed now, and that we need to really show that we've grown enough that we recognize what's going on and that we're willing to stand up and stand alongside of all of the women who are also fighting for bodily autonomy and being able to have ownership over their own selves, like all those white Christian men already have over their own selves.
That's a great point, Mark. And I think that's one of the big ways that we see the religious right trying to control the political process. And one of the reasons why is because we want ultimate control over women's bodies. I think that's what's happening with the reproductive rights debate, really what it comes down to is white men wanting to control women's bodies. So we had a question come in about different forms of love. And so maybe an important thing to say is that there are different types of love in Greek that the English language are just translated as the word love. So right. Agape love is neighborly love. So when we hear like love your neighbor, that's agape. Whereas Eros is the kind of romantic love. And so that's, I think, something that's lost in translation. Yeah. And so we're talking about two different types of love.
Yeah, it's one of the limitations of the English language. It's one of the limitations of translating the Bible. I mean, it's been a while since I've read on it, but I believe there are seven different words for love in the Bible, and they all just get translated as love, and they both are pointing to very different kinds of ways of relating to another person in a kind and caring way. And it's important, as you point out, it's very important to be aware of those as you're talking about what the Bible may or may not be saying.
Right. So I want to shift a little bit because, as you said, there are a number of different topics that we can talk about.
Indeed.
The next one that I want to talk about is the God complex. And so here we've got this mad scientist, Willem Dafoe's character, who is kind of a surgeon, and they play on the surgeon God complex, right?
Right.
He makes a number of comments about, say, he makes a joke, are you talking about God or me? And Noah calls him God, his name is Godwin, right?
Yep.
So I'm curious, Mark, do you see a God complex anywhere else in our society, or do you see us worshiping anyone or anything like a God?
There's no doubt. Yeah, no, surely so.
I'm curious to hear what it is you're going to name of all the things that we worship in the United States. I'm just curious who or what you're going to name.
I got two.
Okay.
And they're actually related, but I'm just going to name Trump, frankly. That's my thing, is that the far right has definitely set him up to be, you know, sent by God, the next coming of Jesus. You know what? He buys into it. You want to talk about a God complex? You want to do a psychological profile and study of someone who has a God complex? Let's talk about the man who inspired and encouraged an insurrection and then wants to go to court, basically saying, I had the right to do that. If that's not a god complex in what's supposed to be a democratic society, I'd be hard pushed to find another one. What about you? Where did you see this god complex?
Well, wait, you had two. That's one.
Oh, the other is just American exceptionalism is also our, we've created that into a god by all standards, yep, without any doubt whatsoever. And that's dangerous on the same level and in combination with. So, but those would be my two immediate ones for sure.
Big, Trump's on my list. The Trump's on my list. I think about money that we worship as God. I mean, Paul Tillich talked about our God being our ultimate concern, that which drives us, right? And so I think most Americans, if we're really, really honest with ourselves, even American Christians, maybe especially American Christians, are really driven by money, a quest for money.
I agree. I've always said, you know, there is a reason why we put "In God We Trust" on our money.
Money?
There's a reason why it's written right there on the money. And another thing that I think is important to point out is that when you make God, money a god, being poor becomes a sin. And that marginalizes so much of society and sort of allows you to justify really horrific and poor treatment of folks. Yeah. So I think that I'm with you. I think we've got to work on that one very much. It's dangerous.
I think we also, especially, or at least some segments of the population, worship guns as God. And I have even had a parishioner tell me they didn't care if what Jesus would say about violence. Yeah. They're not letting their go of their guns. So I mean, they basically said I worship my guns. So I've got one more question. I've got a lot of questions, but I want to squeeze another one in while we've been talking about money, because that is something that's important in the show.
Yeah.
So Bella says, money is its own form of sickness. And she also gives money to people who are impoverished. She lives in poverty for a while. Yes. And she says, if you know the world, you can improve it. So I'm curious on your thoughts on money, Mark, and then how do we gain exposure to care about, like, say, extreme poverty in the world without poverty tourism or something like that? Do you have thoughts on that? Drop this light question a few seconds.
We've got a minute here, so I can answer this. I actually will have some time to spare with this minute. I don't have to answer the thing about that you asked about thoughts on money, because we've already talked a little bit about the dangers of money and worshiping money and how in a capitalistic society, we have really allowed it to control far too much of society. I think the quick, if I've got to encapsulize my answer about how do we end up understanding the dangers of poverty without having kind of the poverty tourism and that kind of thing, it's one simple word: relationships. Get out of your comfort zone, stop walking in the circles that you walk in all the time, and start finding ways to engage with folks who are struggling in real ways, not in "I'm going to show up and take pictures and leave." Like, develop real relationships, understand who they are, understand what their struggles are, understand how the systems in society are stacked against them and are created to keep them in their spot, no matter how hard they work at it. I was just talking to somebody who recently their family came into a spot where they have a little extra income, more than they used to. And they realize how easy it is to have money and how expensive it is to be poor. Yeah. Because when you're poor, there's so many fees. There's so many things you can't afford. Paying for things over time rather than in one shot cost you more money. We've made it a sin, a crime, difficult, something that you are penalized for being poor. And man, there is a society will not last long when that's the foundation that it's trying to build off of.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, Mark. I would also say that, like, churches and people who are interested in doing good work, to partner with organ if you're going to somewhere where there is extreme poverty too, mm-hmm. and that even more extreme than we find in the United States, to partner with organizations that have ongoing relationships. Absolutely. That yeah. that don't try to do your own thing, don't try and solve world poverty. Go and work with organizations that stay in communities and mm-hmm. build relationships with those. Don't do a one-time thing. Continue to learn over time. So there's a lot more we could talk about in terms of the financial aspects of that, but we can't, because if we do, we're not going to get to make me look stupid. And if we don't get to make me look stupid, it just won't be a Monday.
What's the point of the show?
There's just no point. There's no point. So let's take a quick break, grab a drink, come back, and try to make each other look stupid.
Welcome back to the Moonshine Jesus Show. You're joining us for our Make Me Look Stupid segment. It's a segment where we either try to make our co-hosts possibly look stupid by asking a question that might stump them, or maybe we make ourselves look stupid by saying, I've got this question that I don't understand and I don't have the answer to. I'm looking forward to you telling me what's really going on here. So I am going to sort of lean in that direction on this question. And it's I'm going back to something you already brought up about how the William Dafoe character Godwin is called God. And there's clearly some intentional parallelism going on there. This is a very symbolic movie, right? I mean, we see it over and over again in the movie. And Bella calls her adopted father, creator, God. Creator, important word there, God. About the time that she reaches enlightenment, he dies. Is the director trying to make a statement here about the concept of God and being enlightened?
That we, once we become enlightened beings, no longer need to see a God, or we no longer need to believe in juvenile God. I think so. That actually struck me as well. But I think it's built on the wrong kind of notion of God. And so I think this is part of the issue with how most of us see God. You know, I had someone reach out to me once and they said, you know, I just don't think I believe in God anymore. You know, how can you be a minister and believe in God? I said, well, what God is it that you don't believe in? and it's kind of like an old guy in the sky notion of God. And, you know, I don't believe in that God either. That, like, if we are, I think Christianity or religion, spirituality, whatever it is, at its best, is something that is encouraging us to always be growing deeper in our questioning of what the truths of the universe are. And if we recognize that mystery of the universe that is unexplained, but connecting us all in some way, that is God, then I think that's different than if we, you know, reach enlightenment and are like, well, I don't believe in my buddy in the sky anymore who's ultimately pulling the strings. And I think that's the commentary that's being made, is that we don't need that buddy in the sky. But I think that's a wrong concept of God, or at least a concept that's not helpful to me. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, I think that's the reason I said that the word I used of creator, I wanted to bring that in because the concept of creator God, that, you know, this almost literal understanding biblically of who and what God is, and that when we reach enlightenment, we do question that God and we do arrive at different places. One of my closest friends, atheist guy, loves telling his buddies that one of his friends is a minister, and then he'll always say, but the God that I don't believe in, he doesn't believe in either, kind of to your point. And so I mean, I think there is this point at which we are willing to question our belief systems and to be more realistic about just what's out there and say, okay, maybe I need to shift my understanding of what this cosmic God, this divinity, this divineness, this stuff that stitches the universe together and connects us all, what it is, how I'm in relationship with it, and what that should mean in terms of how I'm also in relationship with everything else. So yeah, I'm on the same page as you are for sure with that. All right, so your turn though. Time to make me look stupid.
We'll see about that, Mark. I'm really just curious about the title of this movie, Poor Things. I'm wondering who or what the Poor Things are. Do you have perspective on
that,
Mark?
I think there's two levels of Poor Things. Okay. I think one of the understated themes of this that we didn't spend a lot of time talking about, although in your questioning, we did talk a little bit about when we started touching on money, is this is a very anti-capitalism type of movie. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of Marxist kind of themes that pull out on this. So I think Poor Things, for one, is pointing to what a dominating Marxist society really leads to, and that is a large poor population. But I also think Poor Things talks about those who haven't reached enlightenment, those who have not strived to find a place, and that it's not a damning or a judgmental kind of statement about them, as much as a sympathetic of that their life isn't as rich as it has the potential to be, and that they are the poor.
Yeah.
That's the two takes I bring.
Yeah.
It's also just the title of the short story that the whole thing's based off of.
There it is. It was already decided.
What was your take?
You know, I think that ultimately we don't get a terribly positive light of humanity in Poor Things.
Yeah.
And I think Poor Things are humans, the human condition. And I think we find a lot of commentary on how bad the human condition is for a lot of people, the exploitation that happens of a lot of folks. And so I think the Poor Things are us, that human beings are the poor things. But
I like that a lot. No, I like that a lot.
Maybe if we get enlightened, we can accept it. I don't know. Move past that.
This movie threw a whole lot of things at us at a whole lot of times, so I have no doubt it can mean all three and probably 12 other things.
That's probably true. We should have come up with, in the same way that you came up with a list of all the topics, that maybe we should have come up with
a list of all the things that the title could mean.
So
absolutely. I imagine we could go through each one of my topics and find a way to relate Poor Things to that. So listen,
I bet we could have.
This has been an interesting conversation for sure. I think we've been able to end up talking about some really important topics.
Yes, absolutely.
And begin, getting all of us thinking about things that we really need to be putting more time into and figuring out how to expand society in a positive way. And we can't go on anymore. We've really burnt out our time today, but we do need to talk about what we're going to watch for next week's show. What are your thoughts on where we should go with this, man?
Mark, I think Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire is coming out this week. We got to watch that, right?
And talk about it,
because you're a Ghostbusters fan, right?
I'm a massive Ghostbusters fan.
Me too.
Oh, yeah. Well, we don't have any choice, man. We don't have a choice.
We've got to. I'm excited. Right. Frozen Empire, and we get like the original cast along with the new one,
and they seem to be developing a second new one too. We've got the kids' new one. We've got the old cast, and it looks like, at least from the trailers, that they might be trying to do like a middle age replacement of the original characters too. There's a lot of guest stars that seem to match the personalities. That could be fun and exciting, man. It makes me very hopeful for the franchise. All right. Sounds good. All right. Thank you all. We can't tell you how much we appreciate those who are watching live and sticking with us, sending us comments. We were watching your comments, and the ones that we could, we were working into the show. So we really appreciate that. Those of you who are watching and listening back on your podcast, we really appreciate you. It's like we always say every week, we get to do this because of you, which makes us happy because this is like one of our favorite moments of the week. Absolutely. And y'all are just the best for allowing us to do this. So thank you all. And with that, I'll just say we'll see you the next time on the Moonshine Jesus Show. Moonshine Jesus.